From Pacifica Radio, KPFT 90.1 Houston, this is Open Journal in Exile. Open Journal is the Houston community magazine of the airwaves. Join us as Duane Bradley and Stephanie Coleman explore the wonder that is the Petro Metro and the people who make it happen. And now, from our temporary, socially distanced, alternative studios in exile, somewhere in the greater Houston area, this is Open Journal in Exile. Let the conversation begin.
You are tuned to Open Journal on the Mighty 90 KPFT, listener-sponsored, commercial-free, independent, community-based radio. We thank you for joining us on this In Exile edition as we continue into, what is this now, month 7 of the endurance contest that we're engaged in from our specially enhanced, distantly socialized studio complexes throughout the Petro Metro. It's Open Journal, and we thank you for joining us. I'm Duane Bradley.
And I'm Stephanie Coleman. The pandemic has taken its toll on all of our lives. Loved ones lost, hearts broken, jobs cut, and businesses closed. Many of those businesses are important to our culture and our way of life, and we worry that they may not be there for us when the pandemic subsides. Restaurants have been especially hit, places where we shared important events, met up with families, and unwound at the end of a long day or week. This week, we're checking in with one such establishment to talk about how our favorite restaurants are coping with COVID-19. Established in 1978, Rudyard's Pub, or Rudd's, is a Houston landmark, known by locals as the Living Room of Montrose. Located on the corner of Waugh and Welch, Rudd's provides great pub food, local craft brew, dartboards and billiard tables, poetry readings, stand-up comedy, and music from Houston's indie music scene. Lilia Rogers, owner of Rudd's since 1993, is with us. We'll be grilling her on how she and her fellow restaurants, Tears, are holding up during the pandemic. We won't really grill you. We'll just be nice. Lilia Rogers, welcome back to Open Journal.
Thank you so much.
It'll be a gentle grilling, Lilia. Maybe just a saute.
I just figured grilling was one of those nice punny things that people like to say.
I think, yes, that's Susan.
I believe that.
Totally Susan.
I tried to carry him for her, you know.
So Lilia, you've been in this industry for decades. How would you say, first off, that the restaurant industry as a whole is doing, at least in your observation, throughout the Houston area right now, and then specifically you and the crew at Rudd's, how y'all holding up?
Yeah, so I can say that certainly from the early days of the pandemic to now, that we're kind of settled into a pattern of behavior and existence, that people have pretty much figured out how to respond based on their customer base and how to move forward, or they, you know, have made plans to close. I have been surprised by the people that announced closures, and I've been happily surprised by a lot of the people who have managed to open up with restricted hours and, you know, put all of the safety protocols in place, and they seem to be doing well. I'm particularly happy to see that a lot of the bars that were basically liquor license only have figured out, you know, how to hook up with a food truck to offer food. And basically, I think that offering food actually creates that mindset of, this is a new time, this is a new way of doing things, and we're going to attack this and do it correctly.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It does take some adjustment. It is nice to see places where I'm able to visit. You seem, you know, you want to tip a little more. You want to make sure that they know that we're in community and we're here. Do you have regulars who come through just to say hello?
That's absolutely true. And especially in the beginning, you know, with delivery services and it being very uncertain about what was going to happen with staff. And I know we're going to get into, you know, what the government did in terms of loans and stuff. But, Yeah, I mean, there was even that period that was pre-PPP where literally people who were delivering food, and maybe for the first time in their life, you know, they had been bartending or they had been servers or whatever. And so it was great. They were getting recognized with great tips and people were very supportive. That has settled down as people have basically settled into managing their own situation with the pandemic, with their job. And so what I've seen is in the beginning, there was a lot of, there were a lot of new people in our neighborhood that, you know, we see maybe once a year with the Hyde Park Civic Association or something. A lot of new people were ordering food and were basically coming by to get to-go orders. And a lot of those new people have, you know, fallen away. They still come by occasionally, but it's not the support like a regular. And we have our regulars who, you know, I think they've settled in on Rudyard's. It's like, and I hope your regulars are with you wherever you are. You know?
Yeah.
So, yeah, that phenomenon has absolutely taken place.
That's excellent.
So you did mention government assistance. You know, the CARES Act has provided a lot of emergency funding through this pandemic. The PPP, the Paycheck Protection Plan, small businesses such as yours were encouraged to apply for these forgivable loans to essentially cover payroll for staff. And if it were done and you dotted all the I's and crossed all the T's correctly, you could, at the end of that journey, perhaps have that loan forgiven. How has that process in a real world situation worked or not worked for you?
So for a really rough start, the process has worked well after they had, they were just flooded with requests. And I mean, it was luck of the draw. If you happen to be banking with somebody who was not an SBA approved lender, you know, you were really left out in the cold trying to figure out how to get the attention of somebody, especially if you were small like I am, trying to get the attention of somebody who was going to put your paperwork through. And, you know, we actually missed the window on that first round of funding. And we thought, oh, this is ridiculous. We're, you know, everybody's going to overlook us. And but then it was all the same money, but there was a second sort of round of submissions. Mm-hmm. We had already gotten our email from the SBA that our submission had been accepted, but then they ran out. Remember, they ran out of money?
In 90 minutes, yeah.
Yeah. Right. It was just like, oh, my God. And so then there was sort of kind of a new injection of money into the coffers. And so we were approved for our PPP at that point. We also had done at the same time a submission for a SBA disaster loan, which is not a forgivable loan. And the PPP, what they wanted you to do, the records that they wanted you to keep, and the time frame they gave you in which to spend the money kind of didn't work out. They did come along later on and they expanded the 8 weeks into 12 weeks. But by the time they did it, if you had gotten your loan early on, you were already on a program with your employees and everything of spending the money up in that original 8 week period. And so that's where we were. And had we not been accepted for a disaster loan, it could have been sort of the end of things. But the disaster loan in conjunction with the PPP loan ended up being an appropriate and sufficient amount of money to do the bridge to get stabilized. When the money ran out and when the employment money ran out for employees, we had gotten to a business level where everybody was able to kind of make it work. So we've been lucky. I do feel very lucky. My business model happens to be one where I own my property. Mm-hmm. And I have to believe that those who are dealing with leases and landlords and sort of just the pressure to find the money to make that all work are at a lot more risk than somebody whose business model had them in a purchasing position like we are here at Rudyard's. Did I miss something on that question?
No, that was
That's and I wanted to also say, City of Houston, you know, put together their offering for small businesses to apply for loans of up to $25,000, which came along kind of as the rest of this other money was, in terms of having it and spending it, it was kind of winding down. And so being able to apply for a little bit extra was really great, especially because a lot of the funds that weren't, like a lot of the PPP funds were allocated. You had to spend them in a certain way. You had to spend them on employees, which is great. Don't get me wrong. You had, if you had 20% or 25% that you could spend on certain other things that they specified. But one of the things that helped us was basically finding new revenue streams. And you have to spend some money to bring those streams online.
Right.
So it ends up actually that the money that we got from Harris County was used for that purpose. And that was great.
No, it's really nice to sort of hear from someone, because even as journalists, you're hearing all of these proposed theories and these stories, but to just know in a very human way that it did have value. I'm sure it was a complicated process. I could imagine that paperwork wasn't just effortless, but that it did prove worth the effort. Because you heard initially of all these huge corporations getting this excessive amount of money, and it was like, oh no, what happens to what happens to the little guy, right? By comparison. So it's really nice to hear from you that it did get to the people who it was intended.
Yes, and managing it with the bank to basically reach a point of having it reviewed for forgiveness has not been, just this huge burden. I mean, it has made sense. You were able to set it, it's easy to sort of set up the paperwork, work with your banker to do that. And then the disaster loan, of course, has to be repaid, but it's repaid in the environment that we're in. Of course, it's a preferential interest rate, but the environment we're in, interest rates are already so low. But they're never low for small businesses. For small businesses, you always pay a premium. Yeah. Because you just don't have the credit worthiness of larger, you don't have thousands of dollars sitting around in CDs, just sort of trying to decide how you're going to, are you going to buy back stock or are you going to spend it on building up, your revenue stream?
Yeah.
Anyway, it was great. And also there are lots of tricks that happened in the beginning. Like, here's one that was a problem. It's like, okay, we need to provide to go, because for that whole first 6 weeks, right, March and April, nobody was open. It was all to go. It was delivery and to go. And we already had delivery services, and the delivery services did step up, and they were more helpful than I ever expected them to be. And then we set up a delivery zone, and we actually started doing delivery. Well, part of the problem is even though that was great and people stepped up and our delivery, the portion of what we normally were bringing in revenue wise from delivery went way up. It was not even remotely close to what we normally sell. Mm-hmm. So how do you keep your inventory fresh? How do you have to buy lettuce by the case, but if you're only using 3 heads and throwing away, 12, then what are you doing? Well, it ended up that one of the things that, it was just a win in so many ways, is we got involved early on in donating box lunches to the frontline workers.
Mm-hmm.
And it started with working with Feed the Frontline, and they had basically raised the money and they would sort of pay us for the box lunches. They would do the delivery themselves. And then we said, if this is something that we can do. We set up a Venmo button. We started doing taking in our own money for every $500, $10 per box lunch. And so that paid for 50 box lunches. And then we added another 10 box lunches for 60. So that was our donation section of it. And so, one, it feels great. Oh, and if you donated money, and you had somebody in your family or a friend or whatever who worked in the medical center or in some sort of first responder position, like the fire department or whatever, you could ask to have that person's department be the recipient of the box lunches.
Nice.
So, yes, so people were able to, so we would call and say, you know, so-and-so has donated and we want to bring box lunches on such and such a day. How many people in your department? And one, it feels great to do good. And they were so happy, you know, to be recognized. And I'm sorry, I'm all verklempt.
That's really quite something, Lilia.
What I was going to say is one of the magical things about it is it increased our inventory turnover to a level where our food always stayed fresh. Mm-hmm. And we could have never done that without a huge waste percentage. It just sort of, it made everything work. So not only was it doing good, it did good for us as well. Mm-hmm. You know, behind the scenes, it was a lifesaver.
Well, I was wondering, is that one of what you referenced a little earlier as a new revenue streams that you've created? Is the pumping it up in terms of to go being manifested in different forms like that? Or do you have other tricks up your sleeve? And if so, are you willing to share them with our mm-hmm. listeners, or are they proprietary?
No, they're not proprietary. I mean, they're revenue streams that we want people to know about. I mean, so as we've gotten back into regular dine-in service, the percentage of our revenues that now come from delivery services is much higher. So that's one of the very significant revenue streams that built itself during the pandemic that we've had for several years, and we're never able to, you know, get it to really be a significant portion of the business that we do. So that's one. Then two, I think the last time I was on, we were talking about how we were building out the space that used to be the Next Door pub into a new concept. So that was all set up to come online and do the soft opening and everything in the beginning of April. Yeah. So, and yeah, that was one of the things that had us scared to death. We had just spent quite a bit of money with this makeover for this new space, and we didn't know if we were going to be able to open it or not. It was primarily a bar concept for craft cocktails. It did have food, but how was that going to work? And we hadn't gotten our F&B license yet. We were still, you know, operating under a mixed beverage license and just sort of hoping that if we maintained social, you know, safety protocols and, you know, and our food was good enough and people recognized us for our food, that would be good enough. So little by little, that has opened. It opened a little bit in April. Then all the bars were closed again. And when bars closed again, we closed that space again. Rudyard's was back down to 25% dine in, mm-hmm. and Sixes and Sevens was closed for the moment. We got the F&B license not long after that. And so we opened up Sixes and Sevens with its own menu, which is completely different. It's kind of an Asian inspired menu. So people come for that are not interested in burgers and pizza. So that's another revenue stream. Because we're not able to offer, I'm upstairs, as you can sort of see, and with the skeleton horse for Halloween and the Red's Heart, and that stage, which that's we kind great. Of rebuilt. And since we're not able to do bands right now, we have reopened with some spoken word. For example, Monday nights are the comedy open mic. And sure. We've probably been reopened for comedy open. This is middle of October, correct? Yes, end of October. We've been open, I think, since the beginning of September with comedy open mic. We should be on night 7 or night 8.
So people can come later this evening after this program. And,
that's correct.
There's going to be a comedy open mic night upstairs at Rudd's even now. That's
exactly that's right.
That's a wonderful piece of normalcy.
Yes, it is.
Yes.
You know, and Lilia, you have a very resilient and sort of optimistic spirit. You know, I think a lot of people and businesses and individuals seem to have trouble and struggled because they didn't know, you know, that, I think you're using that word, they didn't know how to pivot. And you seem to have sort of embraced this notion of evolving and reinventing and trying something new and being very open to this uncharted water. Is that, you know, a lot just sort of your nature and personality? Is it your team, or is it just your commitment to rolling with it, a part of your business model and why you've been so successful so long? For you, it's a unique thing to watch, but just sort of for others who may not have that, where does that come from for you?
I definitely think that, yes, being open to change is critical. And I definitely think that one of the things that I personally brought to the table when I bought Rudyard's was, one, I brought a commitment to the stewardship of an established traditional guest house, you know, mm-hmm. public house that, you know, really is a focus for community to come together and eat and drink and be entertained. Mm-hmm. And that's great, but you have to also stay fresh and you have to stay relevant. Mm-hmm. When I bought the bar, we were pretty much driven by punk rock. Not to say that there's not a time and a place for a punk rock band to come and play, but if that's all we did today, we kind of wouldn't be doing it here. We might be doing it somewhere, but it wouldn't be here. And so being open, being willing to accept the possibility of change and what that might mean, I think is one of my strong suits. And also having gone through hardship and lived through it. And I've been, you know, in 27 years, I've had my moments of doubt, no doubt.
Mm-hmm. You're tuned to Open Journal in Exile on a special edition here. This is KPFT in Houston. We're visiting with Lilia Rogers, the owner and proprietor of Rudyard's British Pub in the Montrose neighborhood of Houston. And we're going to continue this in-depth conversation in just a moment. But as always, each week we try to offer a song of the week to you. And this week we're attempting to bring you a classic that was suggested by one of our listener sponsors, one of our donors, Jesse, who wrote in to us all the way from Edmonds, Washington, and suggested this classic pop hit from 1968. It's a singing dance group backed by the music of the famous Texas Southern University Tornadoes from the Fifth Ward of Houston, Texas. Archie Bell and the Drells serve up this American Top 40 number one radio hit from late May of 1968. Tighten Up is the Open Journal Song of the Week.
Of Houston, Texas, we don't only sing, but we dance just as good as we want. In Houston, we've just started a new dance called the Tighten Up. This is the music we tighten up with. First, tighten up on the drum. Come on now, drummer. I want you to tighten it up for me now. Oh, yeah. Tighten up on that bass now. Tighten it up. Yeah, now let that guitar fall in. Oh yeah. Tighten up on the organ now. Yeah, you do the tighten up. Yeah now, I said if you could do it now, you sure would be tough. Now look here, come on now, now make it mellow. Tighten it up now, do the tighten it up. Everybody can do it now, so get to it. We gonna tighten up, but do the tighten up. You can do it now, so baby get to it. But do your left now, but do your right. Everybody can do it, but don't you get too tight. Come on and tighten up, but tighten it up now. Tighten it up now, tighten it up. Come on now, Billy. Tighten it up. Oh, yeah.
Talk it to him,
man. Tighten it up. Come on. Tighten up that, babe.
Kick, kick.
Oh, yeah.
Come on, tighten up, babe. Come on.
Now, look here. I want that guitar to fall in on now. Tighten it up now. Oh, yeah.
Now tighten up, boys. Yeah, now everybody tighten up now. Now look here. We're gonna make it mellow for you now. We're gonna make it mellow now. You can get it. Move to your left, move to your right. Tighten it up now. Everything will be out of sight. Come on and tighten it up. Tighten it up now.
That was Tighten Up from Archie Bell and the Drells. Open Journal's Song of the Week. If you'd like to suggest a song or an artist for the Song of the Week, just reach out to us through the socials or old school us, openjournal@kpft.org. You are tuned in to the Open Journal on Pacifica Radio 90.1 FM, and we're happy to have you on board. And please be aware that the only reason we can have conversations like the one we've been engaged in with Lilia Rogers from Rudyard's and getting to have these more than soundbite types of conversations is because Open Journal allows us that freedom. And you allow us to have Open Journal by your donations. It's tax deductible. If that makes a difference anymore, I figure for most people it doesn't, but just doing the right thing for something you care about, that does. It does make you feel good. I do it. Stephanie does it. Everybody on the team does it. And we help keep KPFT alive. So thanks to those of you who have donated to do that as well. And you can donate to any of the programs on KPFT when you call that number, 713-526-5738, 713-526-KPFT. I noticed during our last broadcast, we got three pledges of support, raising over $700 for KPFT. Sadly, for us, at least in our own selfish way, none of them were for the Open Journal program. But, you know, Nuri Nuri's Blues Brunch made out like a bandit, and so too did our predecessor here, Blues and Hi-Fi, with the great Clint Broussard.
Right.
And Freddie and the All Day Music Show also got a pledge. Came in during ours. I don't know if we get 10% of that or not, but, you know, it's it all goes into the one big pool that is this somewhat dysfunctional but happy most of the time family of Pacifica Radio in Houston, Texas. So what do you think about it, Stephanie?
And you know, every donation counts, and even not only do you get to listen and enjoy, but as for even our, I'll say our Song of the Week, like we've had pledges coming from all over the planet, and Edmonds, Washington, with Jesse sort of talking
about
that.
Yeah, that's kind of cool.
Yeah, you can become a member, and you have even extra bonuses to make recommendations. I mean, we listen anyway, but we listen a little harder if we get some pledges. And we're always here. We're always here for you. And our goal is not just to be here to talk about what we find valuable, but to, with your support and with your donations, to be able to provide the information to be better citizens, find great restaurants, find great places, be active participants in this wonderful place we call home. And that is what keeps us up at night, that keeps us writing these scripts and coming together as a team. So we would welcome, be it a dollar a day or a lot of dollars in one day. It all goes to KPFT, and we are volunteers, so it's not for us, it's for the greater good. So please, please donate what you can. Please share the love. Please ask someone, even if they're not a Houstonian, this is a sort of a historic space.
And speaking of historic, there is a rare 50th anniversary KPFT t-shirt. We are in the latter part of KPFT's 50th anniversary year. So you can donate $100 and get this uber cool 50th anniversary KPFT t-shirt that's got a really cool microphone, kind of like mine, design, maybe even cooler. And that's one thing you could get. I believe that's also available on a mug now. And there's also the 50th birthday party that was not live, but it was just like we do everything these days. It was a Zoom concert with lots of great artists. It was several hours of great, great music where people in their own living rooms, you know, performed a song or two and shared it with KPFT listeners. You can get that on a DVD or on a little thumb drive CD stick, if you wish, for a contribution to the cause of conscious communication. So that's a cool thing.
That is a cool thing. That's your moment in history.
All right. Yeah. So you need something like that, call the pledge line. It's 713-526-5738 or 526-KPFT, 713-526-5738. Online listeners, kpft.org, easy, just tap the donate button. And then down in the little memo section, check the box that says Open Journal when you make your pledge. Visa, Discover, American Express, MasterCard, quick, easy, painless. Do the right thing by the radio station that's done right by you for, well, we're into our 51st year. Mm-hmm. Open Journal's been on since the early 80s. We've been doing this version of it now for well over 3 years every Monday evening on KPFT. So thanks for being there. Thanks for helping out. Thanks for supporting us. I'm Dwayne Bradley.
And I'm Stephanie Coleman. So glad to be here and also be talking sort of historic values and historic spaces with Lilia Rogers of Roots. And just really amazed at your resilience and capacity and optimism and the notion that Houston has been able to sort of give back some of that love and we'll keep holding tight and keep going on. Your spirit is amazing. But you also have a background in finance, I think. Sort of have a wonderful understanding of, I'd say, the business of this. Are there some unique resources if you were to design the perfect plan for surviving a pandemic? What would that look like?
Yeah, you know, I'm going to say that just like y'all have events that are driven by what happens as time goes on with the radio station, which I wanted to say, by the way, I saw the 50-year concert and it was an amazing cross section of Texas singer-songwriters and mm-hmm. everyone should see it. Anyway, that kind of thing is the type of thing that because it was the 50th anniversary and because you have these roots in the community, you were able to put together this concert that basically is sort of this touchstone of music and a hallmark of Texas history. And so the same thing happens with, you know, people hear the term legacy establishments like Rudyard's. And legacy cuts both ways. On one hand, yes, we've been here a long time. We basically are venerable in many ways. Legacy also means that you can be, you know, old and out of date and yeah, just not relevant anymore. So you have to be, what do I want to say, discerning about what you decide to. You can only act on so many things. Mm-hmm. You have to pick and choose your battles. I was sitting here thinking when we were talking about, you know, new revenue streams, what worked. For example, right in the beginning, we thought we're going to do drive-in movies out in our parking lot. We've got it all figured out. We've got the white screen. The manager, Blake, went and figured out how to broadcast on people's radios. Everybody was going to be able to stay in their car. It was going to, and everybody we talked to was like, yes, that'll be great, blah, blah, blah. And we figured out how to sort of serve people. Then Governor Abbott was like, oh, by the way, we're going to let you serve alcohol out the door. It's like, okay.
Have an idea.
And so, yeah, so it's going to be. It's going to be great because they're going to be sitting there. They're not going to be driving anywhere. Anyway, we had it all figured out. We did two drive-in movies out in our parking lot and you know, nobody came. So
right.
It's one of those things. It's like it had kind of everything going for it and it didn't work. Mm-hmm. So you have to be flexible and you have to admit that sometimes good ideas just don't gain traction. Mm-hmm. And you know, there is kind of no perfect way to plan. I think what worked for us was to sit down every day and talk about, especially in the beginning, everything changed all the time. So you have to project. You have to do a lot of thinking about what might things look like in 3 months. And then what do we have to deal with just today? Just for one day, we have to focus on these things to be safe and these concerns to keep our employees protected. So that's what worked for us was the day-to-day focus while still looking at a time frame into the future and making plans for the future, and it, which is also basically accepting that there's going to be a future, you know?
Right. That's a huge shift, which I think a lot of people are not quite factoring that in, that there is a tomorrow, but enjoying these moments. And it seems like you and your team, I'd call them your family, because you seem to really have created community, are still connected in these daily moments. And that is really important.
And so grateful to have the community, because I know a lot of people are isolated, you know, like my parents are pretty isolated, and it's tough. Mm-hmm. It's tough on them.
Yes. Well, how has that sort of been as you look at the landscape and just, you know, your comedy nights, I think, are a wonderful relief. We can't deny that this is a heavy burden, and we've had loss, and we're trying to navigate our family and protect our family, being separate from our family. It's like a very sort of strange math and how that is working out. I'm really excited that for that you've brought back the comedy nights, or you have the poetry readings, because we do need some laughter and some normalcy in that. How does that feel to be able to bring that community back together, and how are they? We've had a few comedians on who are like, boy, I'd love an audience. I'm sure. But how do you feel about that, and how is that being received?
You know, it's one of those things, like, in addition to doing the comedy open mic, we've actually had some stand-up comedy shows. So, yeah, we had to figure out things like, you know, you can't just sell cover to let somebody in. You kind of have to sell a table. Mm-hmm. And hopefully, you know, they come as a group of four and they get to use that table. Or if it's just two people, they've bought the table. So we found that that's one of the changes, the shifts that has to be made in order to be able to manage the upstairs. And then our tables are distanced at about 10 feet so that the chair backs are 6 feet apart, because people are still pushing back and walking up to get a drink at the bar on their own. And, you know, they have to wear masks. Everybody at Rudyard's has been very, very cooperative about maintaining the safety protocols that we've asked them. It's like, when you're seated and you're drinking and eating, take off your mask, you know, be with the people you came with. But if you get up to go to the restroom, if you go to the bar, you know, you've got to mask up. You've got to basically maintain social distancing and not sit around and, you know, get all chummy and stuff. And people have been very, very, very cooperative about that. Without our customers doing their part, nothing that we do is enough.
Mm. Well, that's good to hear, because we've heard too many incidents of people, you know, claiming, well, I thought I was born in a free country and I've got the right to do whatever I want to. It's like, yeah, well, you got the right to leave too. Get out of my store. Get out of my place.
So, yeah, Lilia, I mean, we have had to tell a couple of people, you're more than welcome to come back when masks aren't required, but right now they are.
Mm-hmm. Do you, as we begin to come to, sadly, a point of needing to wind this up, Lily, I'm wondering, from your perspective as a longtime participant in the cultural landscape of Houston on several different levels, do you think that this pandemic has impacted Houston, the cultural landscape of it, deeply and long-term? What is it you see, you know, in your crystal ball, looking beyond this next season for Houston's culture?
I hope it has. I do know that the masking and the social distancing and the hand washing and everything, I mean, all that could be forgotten in a week if somebody just said, it's safe. It's safe to go out. It's safe to do whatever you want to do. But nobody's going to say that. But I'm afraid that people are going to go, oh, I get to the fatigue, you know, pandemic fatigue, along with relaxation of what is allowed in the city. And we haven't had the greatest leadership. And I want to say, you know, Judge Hidalgo has been, for me, you know, the absolute light in the in the dark. I mean, she is sort of like my new hero. I really, really respect how she stood up to the plate and led Houston and Harris County through a lot of this. And don't get me wrong, I mean, Mayor Sylvester Tuck, you know, he did his too, but Judge Hidalgo was the one who's sort of my shining star. I want people to go forward and to kind of, you know, in a new world. And, you know, there's been so much, you know, there've been whole uninvestigated chapters of social justice that needs to be addressed. There've been whole aspects of how to keep elderly people, you know, safe in times that basically challenge their ability to move around, get around. I hope that there are going to be lasting things that come from this pandemic experience that are positive. But I don't know that I feel, I don't know where I come down on that. I'm kind of 50-50.
Well, I know that people can keep up with what the goings-on are at Rudyard's simply enough by checking rudyardshtx.com, where I looked, I saw a calendar, I saw a menu. I kind of know what's going on there. And it's great to catch up with you, Lilia, and we appreciate you being in the community, and we thank you for joining us on this Open Journal in Exile. Mm-hmm. Hope one day we get to, you know, like, hug you person to person instead of just over.
We can do the elbow thing.
That's okay. My elbows are getting a little bruised.
It's kind of like the chicken dance.
All right. Thank you
That's
so much.
Great.
Thank you, guys.
Appreciate
having
you.
I love you guys.
You.
We love you too. You.
It is time to wrap the Open Journal for this week. I'm Dwayne Bradley, and you can check kpft.org for archives of all the programs. And please, you can also listen to and subscribe to our podcast, simple enough, KPFT OJ. And you could actually go and drop something in the tip jar for us at kpft.org, or maybe call in a pledge here in these last seconds, or anytime that, you know, maybe it wakes you up in the middle of the night and you think, you know, I enjoyed that conversation with Lilia from Rudyard's. I ought to drop a couple of dollars in the tip jar for KPFT, but it's the middle of the night. We'll call anyway, or get online and do it anyway, and just tell them it's for Open Journal. That's what we did last week for Nuri Nuri. So, you know, 713-526-5738 is the phone number. 713-526-KPFT. Thank you so much. I'm Dwayne Bradley.
And I'm Stephanie Coleman, in support of Wayne. You can definitely connect with KPFT 24 hours, and Open Journal is always a great box to check off. We are a dedicated all-volunteer production staff, including Rambling Rick Campbell, Susan Phillips, and Maverick. And our supporters, you. We couldn't do this without you, and we thank you profoundly and always for your donations and support. Open Journal theme music provided by Kevin McLeod. And be here with us for Open Journal next week for more great conversations. Thanks for your support.
And if you have not voted yet, please, you have a few days left. You have till Friday to early vote, and then a week from tomorrow, the big day. And something maybe to carry you through our thought for the week. It comes to us from Viktor Frankl, who said, between stimulus and response, there is a space. In that space is our power to choose our response. In our response lies our growth and our freedom. Take care of each other.